Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. And Aaron, we can just start right off with the Southeastern Conference. They began conference play in the best league in America. And this week, of course, we're going to have a big SEC matchup on national television with Florida and South Carolina. But that series, a little shine got taken off that series, Aaron, with Florida just looks impregnable as they dominate Vanderbilt, giving up five runs all weekend. And South Carolina looks human. Their offense continues to struggle, and they wound up getting swept at Kentucky, losing two one-run games, but scoring only nine runs the whole weekend. It's amazing. Let's focus on the Gamecocks. It's just a shock when a Ray Tanner team gets swept. It just doesn't seem like that ever really happens to South Carolina. I guess we'll focus first on the Gamecocks, and before we get into Kentucky, the team that did the sweeping. How concerned are you about the Gamecocks going forward as far as their offense and their late game situations as they lost a couple late leads or close games here this weekend?
You know, I think it's fair to wonder how good of an offensive team this is going to be, because it hasn't been for 5 weeks now. I mean, they're averaging less than five runs a game. They're winning a lot of games still because they have a great pitching staff and they haven't allowed many runs. And, they didn't allow many runs this weekend. I mean, 4-4-6, it's not like they're getting bludgeoned. So I'm still not terribly concerned about the pitching staff. Even the bullpen, which didn't pitch great this weekend, I mean, has been good for most of the year. I think losing, it sounds like they lost Ethan Carter this weekend, to a disciplinary issue. I don't know that he's going to be back for them, reading between the lines. So I think that's actually a significant loss because he was kind of a nice right-handed setup guy there for Forrest Kumis. So that's something to keep an eye on. But, I think with Tyler Webb back there and, I still believe in Kumis as the closer. I mean, in general, I think he can do the job. I don't think South Carolina needs to move Matt Price back to the bullpen. I'm sure that's going to be a topic of conversation in Columbia. But, I think the pitching is fine. I don't know how potent South Carolina is going to be offensively. They weren't exactly, John, explosive last year, and they won the national championship anyway because they were, they were mentally tough and they had great pitching and defense and all that stuff. But if you compare them to Florida, like, you talked about this series coming up in Gainesville, right. In Columbia, rather, excuse me. Florida on paper has all the advantages. They're so much more explosive offensively. They have so much more power. Their pitching staff has been, particularly the bullpen, has been more consistent. South Carolina is at home, and that's nice. It's going to be a great atmosphere, and the Gamecocks, they find ways to get answers there. I mean, they don't stay down for long. The coaching staff is too good, but I think it's fair to wonder at this point whether or not South Carolina is going to go through some bumps in the road here with this young team with a lot of new starters on the field.
And that's a great way to put it. There are a lot of new starters, and this is just an unexpected bump in the road as far as getting swept. I don't think it's necessarily shocking that they lost the series. Or series, as I probably should say. They also seem like they've had some inconsistency in their middle infield defense. I know they've kind of played a couple guys over at shortstop. Are they a particularly left-handed team, Aaron? Were you surprised that their offense was held down by three left-handers, or should I just give more of the credit to Kentucky for the way it pitched?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, I look at South Carolina. They don't strike me as a team that's terribly unbalanced as far as left and right. I mean, their best hitter, Christian Walker, is a right-handed hitter.
Right.
They're not like – to me, they don't feel like a North Carolina or a UCLA, where you look at them and they say, man, if you could throw a good lefty out there, you've got a chance to mow through these guys. I think that makes Kentucky's win even more impressive. Is it's not like they necessarily matched up great with South Carolina with the left on left thing. I think Kentucky's a pretty darn good team, John. I think they're complete. I mean, I think, you know, we talked about those three lefties in the weekend rotation. You know, I think A.J. Reed is another lefty coming out of the bullpen this weekend. I mean, to me, he feels like Brian Johnson part two. I mean, he's just a big, physical, powerful left-handed hitter with, you know, with a really good feel for three-pitch mix on the mound. And he's, you know, I mean, I think that's a guy who's got a chance to be a really special player for them. And Austin Cousineau, another freshman that we've talked about a little bit. I mean, I know it's a guy that you really like is a dynamic center fielder. These young players fit in so well with the veterans that they have. You know, Luke Maley's come into his own as a power guy in the middle, and you know, the JT Riddle and Matt Ryda at shortstop in the middle infield. I mean, it's a good group, and they've put in some junior college transfers and some freshmen, and you know, I think this team could be dangerous.
And they've got a nice physical middle of the lineup with Flynn and Maley that are a couple of guys. You know, Flynn, the transfer from Morehead State, who's already got 6 home runs for them. And Maley, when we were looking at this team in the preseason, you know, we get all these questionnaires we've talked about before on the show. You know, they were clearly very enthusiastic about their club. I mean, the you know, they thought they had outstanding team chemistry. You know, they talked about basically like how much depth they have in their pitching staff in their lineup. They really didn't point to a weakness on their club except for maybe their infield defense. But clearly, they defended well enough this weekend. And like you said, they look like a very complete team, Kentucky. It's not – I don't think you could use the word fluke with them, especially in terms of their talent. Is it maybe a little bit fluky that they swept the series? I wouldn't even know if I'd say that. I think the fluke was that it was really hard to get to know just how good they were going to play, how well they would play this weekend, considering that their caliber of competition coming into it had been Buffalo, Illinois, Chicago, that kind of thing. Now it seems like, Aaron – They're set up fairly well, but they're going to have an interesting test because their next they win this big series, they sweep this series, they're going on the road for their next two SEC series at Tennessee and at Georgia, and three out of their next four are all on the road with another one at Arkansas. So, I think we've realized that Kentucky's for real. Now they really kind of have to see this 21 game winning streak. They're too shy of the SEC record, which apparently was just set 2 years ago by LSU's championship team. 3 years ago, I guess it was actually. Wait a minute, no, it was 2010, so that wasn't LSU's championship team.
Okay.
In 2010, it's according to this thing I was reading on the Batcats website, which I guess is what the Lexington paper calls the Kentucky baseball team, the Batcats, which I think is it's almost like treating them like a women's basketball team. You know, strange to see Batcats, and it says from staff reports. So the Lexington paper did not staff this series. Meanwhile, South Carolina, I think, had like 7 or 8 people travel up with it, media contingent, on the road for an SEC series. So obviously basketball school versus, a baseball school at South Carolina. It's always fascinating to me to see how, you know, a place like Kentucky, this should kind of help. This team can kind of help put their baseball program kind of back on the map where they had a nice run there under John Cohen, now at Mississippi State, and we'll talk about them later in the podcast. But pretty amazing to me that this series, which we were both looking to, is like, this is going to be a really interesting series to kind of see how Kentucky measures up. The home paper didn't even cover the series.
Yeah, that's too bad. You hate to see that. I mean, it's a big series coming to the weekend. But I'll tell you what, John, Kentucky, you know, they've got a winnable stretch. Even though these games are on the road coming up, you know, you got at Cincinnati, at Tennessee, at Western Kentucky. I mean, you could – or home against Western Kentucky. You could imagine, you know, the Wildcats being 25-0. I mean, 26-0 heading into that Georgia series. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not. I really don't expect them to go sweep all four of these games on the road, though. First time on the road, you know, Cincinnati's decent. But then at Tennessee – that's going to be a challenge. For me, just going on the road in league play will be different. But like you said, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It would be heady territory for them to have the baseball program. They're still not going to get the headlines considering the basketball program, and it's Kentucky and the way their basketball team is playing. But, yeah, you could go into that Georgia series. That'd be crazy, Aaron, the 26-game win streak. That'd be a little nuts. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Let's keep it in the Southeastern Conference, Aaron, because we mentioned Florida. The Gators go and sweep that series from Vanderbilt. 17-game winning streak for Florida, which is nothing to sneeze at, obviously. Kind of amazing. And they've played a little bit tougher caliber of competition than the Wildcats have. But Vanderbilt, you know, you're only 20 games in, and you don't want to stick a fork at anybody. But, wow, the Commodores didn't really offer much resistance to the Gators. I think you hit on it in your preamble a little bit, just how complete Florida is. I mean, their power really stands out compared to other clubs.
Oh, when you've got, I mean, just Preston Tucker and Mike Zeno alone. I mean, those two guys, a right-handed power hitter and a left-handed power hitter. I mean, those guys are, you know, I mean, nobody, I don't think there's any team in the country that has two guys in the middle of the lineup who can match that. And Stanford's got all kinds of physicality and some power in there. But as far as proven home run hitters, you know, those guys are as dangerous as it gets. And then you add a Taylor Gushue in there, the freshman. I mean, that guy just keeps on raking for them, and just what they need is one more power bat. I mean, it's crazy. I think Vikash Ramjet's probably the best bench player in America. I mean, you know, he could be a frontline starter at a lot of places at first base or DH, and they don't have room for him.
Yeah, he's just not playing very much. Like you said, they don't have room for him. And then another point that you mentioned that I really like is the depth of their bullpen. And I want to talk a little bit with you about Austin Maddox, because he fascinates me on a team where, you know, obviously Brian Johnson is the top two-way player in the country. I mean, that's fair to say. I mean, the guy's a stud on the mound and a tremendous hitter as well, a force in the middle of their lineup. And again, another power bat like you're talking about. But Austin Maddox, a guy who, and we had 70 raw power grades thrown on this guy when he was in high school. He was a pretty accomplished high school player, and as a college player, especially since the change in bats, he's really remade himself as this just complete shutdown closer. He hasn't walked a guy yet this year. Their bullpen depth is really enviable, and we saw last year in Omaha they had the advantage in bullpen depth over South Carolina. It didn't really matter because South Carolina's top two bullpen guys were just unhittable in Omaha, and Price and Jonathan, the now departed John Taylor. But it feels like Austin Maddox could be a one-man bullpen if he needed to. This guy has been so good, and it feels like he's just the X factor on this team who has developed in a way differently than maybe how they envisioned it when they recruited him.
I think that's true, and I think it is a 1-2 punch in there that's similar to Price and Taylor, except you've got Maddox from the right side and Steven Rodriguez from the left side. I think the world of Steven Rodriguez is a college, you know. Left-hander with a filthy cutter that you can extend and, you know, goes deep into games if he needs to. And I think he's fantastic. So, you know, I think those two guys back there really give them a weapon. And you know what? I think you're going to see Maddox as the season progresses. I think he might play a little bit more in the lineup as well. I mean, he had 3 hits this weekend. He started the first game and came off the bench in the second game and had a pinch hit single or a hit. You know, Sully's talked about how he just kind of wanted to ease Maddox and Johnson in a little bit, you know, not put too much of a load on them early. But he does believe both those guys, you know, including Maddox, are still valuable offensively. And you know, I think Maddox will continue to have that dual role. I mean, this guy was even this year, even though he's more of a pitcher now, it seems like he still was voted a preseason second team All-American as a two-way player by the scouting director. So, I mean, he's still got legit two-way talent.
Yeah, his physicality and his versatility seem to make him a very unique player. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. We've got a couple of Twitter questions. The blog, Woe Doctor, the Twitter handle is @WoeDoctor, asks, Carsten Whitson is still out. Legitimate, potentially long-term health concerns or precautionary measure? Aaron, it seems like our information right now is precautionary measure, correct?
Right. As far as I know, that is the case. And maybe that situation will change, but it does seem like they're just being careful. And certainly, you know, they haven't had any problems on Sundays without him. You know, Jonathan Crawford said, obviously, Whitson's going to be a big part of for now, but on there, and hopefully he comes back. But right now, still don't have a timetable for that.
Other SEC team, let's keep it in the SEC briefly, Aaron. We haven't really talked that much about Arkansas maybe this year because they haven't, you know, done anything that's wowed anybody, but here they are, number 3 in our latest top 25 rankings. And doing kind of – they kind of are who we thought they were. They really, really, really pitch this Razorbacks team, and their pitching depth really in evidence, as you talked about a couple weeks ago, the way they've been able to stretch out their bullpen, where Nolan Sandberg doesn't even necessarily have to be the closer. He's kind of in this middle relief expanded role right now.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, he came in there on Sunday when they needed him in the fifth inning and relieved Randall Fant and gave him 2 2/3 strong innings. And you know, I think they kind of like having Barrett Aston at the back of the bullpen. I mean, this guy's got pretty good stuff on his own. It's not maybe as electric as Sandberg, but I think maybe he's a little bit more of a reliable strike thrower. I think Sandberg throws strikes too, but I think Aston's maybe got a little bit better command. And so they feel comfortable with him back there, and that gives you a really nice dynamic, kind of middle moment of truth stopper in the middle with Sandberg. So, and they've got all kinds of other pieces like Kate Lynch and Brandon Moore and these guys that they can mix in there. And I do like their bullpen depth a lot. I like their rotation a lot, and I like their lineup a lot. I think that their pitching staff is probably better than their offense, but. You know, they've got some balance in that lineup too, and a lot of athleticism.
Yeah, one of your guys who was a pick to click for you, kind of coming into the year, and we talked about this in the office when we were doing our college top 100 prospects. We got a little pushback when you had Matt Reynolds pretty high on the list, the third baseman for Team USA last summer, hit 220, didn't really do a whole lot offensively for the college national team. And yeah, this guy's hitting 380 with power so far this year. And the other thing that really sticks out about their lineup, you talked about their athleticism. To me, that's just a Dave Van Horn trademark. He recruits speed. Yeah. He recruits athleticism. But their play discipline is amazing. They've got almost a 400 on-base percentage as a team. Their walk-to-strikeout ratio is nearly 1-to-1. Is that something that you were expecting? I'm just a little surprised by that with Arkansas, the way they've manufactured a lot of offense this year.
I think I am surprised by that a little bit because they they haven't been a great offensive team last year, I suppose. They kind of
I mean, the last couple of years it doesn't feel like they've ever really been the last couple of years I feel like they haven't been a juggernaut. They had those years with the Zach Coxes and Andy Wilkins, right, where they had some real boppers in the lineup, but that feels like that was almost getting away from what I think of with Dave Van Horn. You know, this is more like a classic Van Horn team.
Yeah, and you know, last year I think they really struggled at times to get on base, and certainly didn't hit for a good average as a team. I mean, I was curious how their approach would play this year, and I think you look at Tim Carver as a guy who's really come into his own as kind of a catalyst for them, and it's a guy who in his whole career never really got on base consistently, and he's become a guy that has done that more effectively, and that's been a big difference for them. But Matt Reynolds, the same thing. I mean, you look at Reynolds and Ficicello now, I think have what, 34 walks and 14 strikeouts combined. So I mean, when you're big guys in the middle, I mean, that to me feels a lot like a Florida State kind of a stat right there. It seems like Florida State or Clemson, you know, those teams, North Carolina, you know, those teams always have, Arizona State, those teams always have those guys in the middle that, you know, you can't pitch to them because if you do, they'll punish you if you're in the strike zone. And they're patient enough to take their walks, you know, I feel like Ficicello and Reynolds are kind of that duo for Arkansas.
I agree. It's a great way of putting it. And elsewhere in this Southeastern Conference, and we'll wrap this up, but it does sound like the other kind of interesting series really was Ole Miss, which was ranked 12th in the top 25 coming into the week, loses a series at home to Auburn. Kind of definitely a surprise series. I mean, a big series for Auburn to pick up because, you know, preseason, I think we had them as a regional team. Outside looking in, as far as a regional team goes,
right?
If they were kind of a bubble club, and Ole Miss, you know, like I said, it was number 12 in our rankings, and you have Ole Miss cough up a late lead on Sunday, and Auburn kind of sneaks in there and ends up winning that series. You have any concerns, I guess, about Ole Miss going forward? It seems like they had a one defensive lapse game with a 5 errors on the Saturday game, and then Sunday just kind of blew a late lead, but weren't really that offensive against an Auburn team. You don't see a lot of Sunday games that are low-scoring, one-run affairs.
That's true. You're right. And, you know, on the whole, I wouldn't say that I'm at all concerned about Mississippi's offense. I mean, I think they've got a really good offense, one of the better lineups in the SEC with you know, power and guys who can hit up and down the lineup and good depth. You know, we think we've talked about Alex Yarbrough and Zach Kirksey as a couple of guys who've really gotten off to great starts for them. And we'll have a Alex Yarbrough feature on the website, in fact, this week. But that was a really surprising result. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Mike Myers, you know, really nice. Pitched deep into the game and he was one strike away from a complete game victory and a 2-1 win, with the bases empty and two outs in the ninth inning. And, you know, the wheels fell off, a couple of doubles by Auburn, and all of a sudden the whole complexion of the series changes. But to me, I mean, again, it's, you know, it feels like one of those things where it's not a cause for panic. You know, you're that close right. to winning the series and you lose the series. Well, you know, I mean, you move on. It's baseball. I mean, it's, you know, I think we put a lot of emphasis on winning weekend series, and, you know, hey, they did lose this series. We dropped them, what, five spots in the rankings. But I don't think it's a reason for serious concern.
Yeah, I don't think it revealed anything that we didn't already know about Ole Miss as kind of where I would go. And meanwhile, it could be something really – it could be for the league, for the SEC, it could be a good thing. It could be the kind that Auburn can kind of pin its regional resume to as the season goes on. It's the Baseball America Podcast with John and Aaron. We'll remind you that the Baseball America College Podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. ATEC is committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more at ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. I know I got my Mite League schedule, Aaron, so coach pitch this year. So I've already headed over to ATEC for a couple of training drills with 7-year-olds. So they're going to go through it. They're going to have more than they bargained for when they play on my team this year. Let's put it that way. Let's go to the Pac-10, Aaron. The biggest series out in the Pac-12. I'm going to be tripped over that for a long time. Biggest series in the Pac-12 this weekend. You were at it, UCLA and Arizona State. Bruins and Sun Devils, kind of two different teams. You wrote a lot about this on Three Strikes. The Sun Devils, I kind of want to get your take on that club, maybe their mindset of a team that's basically where the regular season is all they've got as their NCAA infractions. They don't have postseason eligibility. Did you get any sense of how that team is reacting to, or is they carrying themselves any differently with that, with the regular season is basically all they have?
You know, I don't think they are, and it's I think they're reacting kind of how you'd expect Arizona State to react based on the way they've handled the last couple of years. And this program, as we've talked about, they've been through it. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, you know, Pat Murphy, that whole thing happened right before the season started. I mean, it was in, what, December, I think that happened. You had all that turmoil, you know, with the coaching change, and, you know, they just went out there and went to Omaha. You know, and then the following year, of course, you know, they entered the season having not knowing whether or not they'd be able to play in the tournament, and they had that hanging over their heads all season long, you know, and of course they had the Corey Hahn situation, and they went out there and you know what, they won a regional. I mean, they these guys, you know, the mental toughness that this team has and the whole program, it's just you know, this aura about them. Even with, you know, a lot of turnover now, I mean, they recruit these hard-nosed guys, and you look at them with their baggy uniforms and their, you know, scruffy beards and all this stuff, and it just feels like these guys don't care. They're going to go out there and play baseball. And you know, and I talked about that with Brady Rogers a little bit. We'll have a piece on him in the dugout segment that we do.
Rogers' piece.
That's right, Rogers. And he kind of embodies that whole thing for me. I mean, I think he just he's just a, you know, a big old Texas bulldog who's going to go out there and win. And he kind of talked about how they're not worrying about that stuff. You know, control the controllables is what Augie Garrido would say. And I feel like this team really believes that. And they just go out there and, you know, hey, so what? They can't play in regionals. They're going to go out there and play baseball. That's what it's about.
I like that attitude. I've always been a fan of the old school baggy look that the Sun Devils have used.
Yeah.
It's much superior to their early 90s and mid 80s, kind of the bright yellow, you know, look they used to have. So I'm a fan of that look. UCLA continues to get it done offensively, which has been impressive. Let's talk about our Pacific Northwest real quick here, Aaron, because we had Oregon lose a series again to Washington. Kind of, we put the, as we like to say in the top 25 rankings meeting, we put Oregon on notice. They dropped to the bottom of the, they're at number 24, and with each waning, each interceding week, that sweep at Vanderbilt looks a little bit less impressive. Hey, everybody's doing it. You know, everybody's sweeping Vanderbilt. But the Ducks drop 7 spots for losing a series at Washington. Meanwhile, the Beavers, the ball was a pretty great weekend for the Ballers as they go down to Cal and sweep that Cal series. And, again, Oregon State, it feels like, you wrote about them in weekend preview, but it feels like it's kind of a familiar club for Oregon State. All the names have changed. They can really pitch, and offensively, if you give them a crack, they really take advantage.
That's true, and I also think that, you know, as I wrote in weekend preview last week, I think the addition of Michael Conforto and Dylan Davis does change the complexion of this team. I mean, I think it gives them more power in the middle than they've had in a while. I mean, Andrew Susak had power last year, don't get me wrong, but, you know, he was also hurt for a chunk of the year, and I think when he came back, maybe the wrist thing maybe sapped his power a little bit. But, you know, these guys, to me, I mean, it's like they haven't had since – what, Cole Gillespie and Mitch Canham in the middle, you know? I mean,
Gillespie's the guy I think of as like a guy who was a true guy who ever had to fear in the middle of their lineup, you know, real power guy. I mean, they had other good hitters in their other very good years, like you said, Susak or Leonardton in the 07 team, these kind of guys.
Right.
But to me, Gillespie was like their last real big power threat.
Right. Maybe Andy Jenkins before him? Is that who I'm thinking of in 05 team?
Nice pull, yeah.
You know, I mean, so they've had guys like that here and there, but you have two of those guys back to back, a couple of really strong freshmen, I think makes them more dangerous. And you know, they've got all those typical Oregon State guys around them, you know, the Beaver dirtbag type guys, you know, the Ryan Dunns and the, you know, all these kind of, you know, Jake Rodriguez. I really love Jake Rodriguez, and now he's catching for them. He's made the transition from second base to being their primary catcher and done a really good job with that. And you know, that's something that I think scouts were kind of waiting to see. I think scouts have been saying for a couple of years that they thought Rodriguez would make a good catcher, and, you know, that's proving to be the case. So that gives them a little bit more flexibility. They can do a bunch of things with their lineup and move guys around. And, you know, I think they're a fun team. I think that, you know, they're going to have ups and downs. I mean, we kind of thought coming into the year that Oregon State, Vanderbilt, some of these teams, you know, had some new players, had some upside, but also had some risk. And interestingly, I think Oregon State has handled that better than Vanderbilt has. You know, two teams that had similar question marks about their experience, particularly on the mound. And, you know, one of them has survived and one of them hasn't. Vanderbilt, I mean, you have to acknowledge the schedule. I mean, they've been on the road against number one Florida and number two Stanford, and they were swept by both of those teams. And there's, you know, I mean, hey, those teams are better. But still, I mean,
that's a key point, though. That's a very key point. I mean, they have not had an easy schedule. I mean, you're going to be knocked back a little bit on your heels when you play Stanford. And you get pounded by them. And that made things very difficult, it feels like, for Vanderbilt. And they really just haven't been able to catch their breath yet. And just when you catch your breath a little bit when you beat Siena a couple times, and then, hey, good luck at Florida. Wear it. And they start off with at Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, at Mississippi State. I mean, I know there's no easy series necessarily in the Southeastern Conference, but if you really wanted one, I mean, no disrespect to these two programs or these coaching staffs, but if there was a team I wanted to play in the SEC this year, it would be Alabama or Tennessee.
Yeah.
And they get those teams later, and they probably could have used them early.
And I might have put Auburn in that discussion, too, until this weekend. And, you know, I think the jury's still out on how good Auburn is, but I think they made some noise this weekend and put people on notice that, you know, they're not going to be an easy series for anybody. So, yeah, this league, you know, as usual, it's a grind. But I'm curious whether or not Vanderbilt will be able to get back on track, because I just don't know how good their pitching is. I mean, hey, it was risk-reward, you know, with Tyler Beattie and Sam Selman. And so far, the risk has certainly outweighed the reward.
There's no doubt about that. They've just been bad. There's no positive spin there. They just have not been a good team. Aaron, let's shift gears a little bit. One of the more interesting midweek series, I should say, was this Arizona Rice series. We're kind of still in that Pac-10, Pac-12 tangent a little bit that we were on. The Wildcats, they're number 5 in our rankings. to me, it almost feels like it's a kind of a soft number five almost. I think we know that they have good talent. This was really their first big test. I would say they passed it. They go on the road and split two games. Midweek series are always tough, and then you play a five-game week with one of those series being a league series. They were at home against Washington State, and they have to rally and win sweep a doubleheader on Saturday to win the series. It still feels like this has been a hard team to get necessarily a great read on. Do you feel that way? And do you feel it feels like we're going to get a better read next weekend at Oregon State? We really feel like, to me, I feel like that'll be a real big measuring stick for Arizona.
No, I agree with you. I mean, they you look at their early schedule, and it's not terribly impressive. I mean, they did have that 2 out of 3 series win against Auburn, but other than that, they were at home pretty much the whole time, I think, and hadn't really had a chance to make a statement until this week. So, I like them because of their talent. But it does feel like there are some question marks. I mean, how good is the pitching? One reason we ranked them so high is because we thought that Kurt Heyer and Connor Wade would be a great 1-2 punch. And, Wade has struggled a little bit the last 2 weeks. And I still really like Connor Wade. And I think he's really good. But, we'll need to see if he can get back on track. And then I think Heyer took the loss, if I'm not mistaken, on Friday. He did, yeah. So I mean, this is his first loss, but he's pitched pretty well this year. I like Matt Troop in the back of their bullpen. I think as a freshman, even though he's a freshman closer, I think he's well suited for that role with his stuff and his mentality. The Sunday job, they've gone with James Ferris there. He certainly has the talent to be a quality Pac-12 starter, but again, he's been a little bit up and down. So I think on the mound is where I still wonder how good Arizona is. But I'll tell you, I didn't think this was a terribly deep pitching staff, and I thought this week would give them trouble with 5 games.
And they survived it a little bit better. The 5 games, they survived it a little bit better, and they also showed the ability that if they need to, they can win a game with offense. They can bang it around 20 runs in the Saturday doubleheader. I thought that was a good sign that they won 3 games during a difficult week. Wazoo, we always know Wazoo's going to battle you. Donnie Marbitt's clubs are grinding kind of clubs. That brings me to Rice, which has also been a little bit of a harder team to get a handle on, Aaron, because just when you think they're kind of going good, they stole a game at Stanford last weekend, which very few other teams have shown they could do. I mean, they shut down Stanford. They've got a sweep against Florida International, but they had kind of an iffy weekend in the Houston College Classic where they gave up a couple runs. They had the big game with Texas where they gave up a lot of runs. Beating Texas Tech and Tennessee, those are games they're supposed to win. It seems like they've been a little bit of an erratic bunch, and that just really comes out to me losing to Grambling State this weekend. They'll start Conference USA play next weekend. It still feels like Rice is the standard bearer for Conference USA and the favorite. Central Florida really hasn't impressed against anybody when they've played better teams, they have lost. East Carolina seems like they're kind of lying there as the sleeper in that league, a team we really haven't talked much about, but a team that has experience pitching, has some arms. It feels like those are the top three clubs in Conference USA, which I think we projected coming into the year, still the top three clubs as we get ready for conference play to start.
I think that's true. Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. And, Central Florida is another one of those clubs that you look at their weekend series, and they played 5 northern teams, all with losing records, some of them with really lopsided losing records. And the midweek games they've played against – those 4 quality Florida teams, Florida, Florida State, and Miami, they've lost all those. They're 0-4 in those games. So, I like UCF's talent. I think they're a nice, solid, balanced college team. But how good are they? Well, I don't think we really know yet because they haven't beaten a good team yet, really. Boston College is okay, but they've fallen off now. They've gotten swept, I think, twice in ACC play. So that series looks a little less impressive. I think Rice – you were talking about them before. They lost to Grambling State. What's the one common thread here with these losses? Austin Kubica. He pitched in that Texas game that they lost. He got hammered at Stanford. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with that guy. I don't know if they need to take a step back and pull him out of the weekend rotation until they can get it figured out, because he's just not the same guy, that dominated for a lot of last year, that dominated in the Cal Collegiate League. I mean, they need to get him straightened out, and whether You know, whether it's a mechanical thing, whether he's arm fatigue. I mean, his velocity was down in Houston when I saw him. And right. You know, they said there's nothing wrong with him physically. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I'm wondering how much more patience they're going to have with him because he has not been good for a month now.
That's a great point, and that's a real concern. Meanwhile, East Carolina, really, we thought this would be a team that could pitch. We really like the experienced senior Kevin Brandt, a talented newcomer in Jarrell Cotton, drafted in the 11th round, 12th round, by the Mets last year. Good junior college player, and the redshirt sophomore Tyler Joyner, who they've had high hopes for in the past. He's been very good in summer ball, but he's had some whether it's academic, I forget what the issue has been. The last year or so, but he's really pitched well. I mean, they really seem like they have one of the better. I mean, if Kubica goes on being the Kubica that he's been this year, East Carolina has the best pitching staff in this conference, doesn't it?
I think you're right. I believe that is true. I think East Carolina's got a decent lineup too. I mean, I think they haven't really hit their ceiling yet as an offensive team, but I like, you know, Corey Thompson in the middle and John Wooten, and you know, I think Zach Wright will come around and hit for some power. He hasn't really done so yet, but this team to me.
Chase McDonald, that's a couple guys who are, you know, some physical guys. McDonald's a sophomore, right, to senior, but some physical guys who you expect will be able to provide some of that power. That, you know, you got to have those guys with some man strength in the middle of your lineup to get to Omaha. This feels like, you know, they have a couple guys who could do that, and they're surviving, you know, as an offense. Maybe not at peak efficiency, but they're surviving, even though two of the guys really expect them to kind of carry the load for them, really haven't gotten going yet.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think when that happens, you know, this team is to me, it feels like a team that could find itself into the top 25 pretty soon. And, you know, they've gotten some quality wins now. I mean, they went down to that tournament at Alabama and they beat Louisville and Alabama and Oral Roberts. And, you know, I like that series sweep against Stony Brook. We like that Stony Brook team. You know, next weekend at UCF, we'll see how good both those teams are. I think it's a great litmus test for both those clubs.
Aaron, real quick, let's hit on the Big 12 and the Atlantic Coast Conference. Real quick look at the ACC, where I guess the story so far is Florida State still pitching better than we thought they would. They've got a series to wrap up with Virginia tonight. That game will be on ESPNU, I'm pretty sure. You have NC State, winner of back-to-back series at home. Pretty big week for NC State, where we're obviously located here in North Cackalack. NC State, where they're pretty excited about their basketball team in the Sweet 16 for the first time in like 6 years. They'll be on the road at East Carolina and then at North Carolina. So for their next four games, they're going on the road here. NC State obviously has moved up our rankings pretty high here to number 20. Anybody stand out of the ACC so far to you? Has there been any surprises in the league?
I think that early on, you could say Wake Forest and Maryland were both, you know, certainly a little bit surprising. I mean, those are teams that we had pegged as probably the bottom quarter of the league coming into the year, and they've both had their moments. I mean, certainly, you know, we've talked about Maryland.
Right.
You know, they've now had two bad weekends in a row. They got swept at Wake Forest, and they lost two out of three against a North Carolina team that you would expect them to lose two out of three to. Maryland had those two first really good weekends at UCLA and then down at the Keith LeClaire. I feel like right now we don't know how good they are. You know, they just lost their starting center fielder for the year with a broken hand and an on-baseball incident, and they had nine guys suspended for parts of this past weekend, so that certainly didn't help.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, you know, who knows what happened there? You can probably read between the lines and figure out there was some kind of incident, but you know, it's a strange deal. And then you got, you know, Wake Forest. I actually still believe Wake Forest is pretty good, even after they got swept at NC State. But I think we can back off a little bit from what we were saying maybe 3 weeks ago when we were talking about how deep this league was, and you know, Boston College, you know, at that point had really emerged and got off to a good start, and you know, Maryland and Wake Forest were kind of making some noise. Now those teams seem like they've settled down a little bit more to what they are, which is, you know, I mean, let's face it, they're back half of the ACC teams that probably, you know, maybe one of those teams will make a run of regionals, but let's not get carried away.
That's, you were headed in exactly the direction that I was trying to lead you to. So I'm very pleased as a podcast host that you took the lead and went where I wanted you to go, because that's what I'm thinking. And the other thing that stands out to me, Aaron, about the Big 12 is that this is a league as a collective that does not seem like it has a dominant team. You have Texas A&M, the preseason favorite. They're still our highest ranked team in this conference, but you know, almost an inexplicable Friday loss to Kansas State, where Michael Wacha really gets just knocked around, like a Fozzie Bear. I couldn't help myself. I just did a little quick math, even though I'm a liberal arts guy. Did a little quick math here. This league has a collective winning percentage below 600.
Wow.
Which, you know, it's early in the year. Usually, you expect the big conferences to have gaudy win loss records. They've only got one team that's 10 games over 500. That's Texas A&M.
Yeah.
I feel like it was a really this is a league that's in danger of being a four-bid league.
Yeah.
I think it's a big story of the weekend, obviously, was, you know, Texas and Baylor getting sweeps. Baylor sweeping Texas Tech. Texas sweeping a series at Oklahoma. I know you don't want to hit the panic button, like you said. It's just March. But, boy, Oklahoma's pitching is kind of a – I don't know if I should say shambles, but they're just not – they're not performing at peak efficiency, put it that way.
No, they're not, and I think there's cause for concern there. I mean, their whole the whole expectations for Oklahoma were, I think, in large part predicated upon the belief that these junior college guys were going to come in there, Jonathan Gray, Stephen Okert, Damian Magnifico in particular, those three guys were going to come in and take on huge roles in the weekend rotation and in the back of the bullpen. And all three of those guys have been very – erratic. I mean, they've had their moments, but on the whole, I think they've been unreliable. And, you know, that I think that is reason to adjust our expectations for Oklahoma until further notice. I think in general, I agree that the Big 12 looks down this year. And even coming into the year, I think we projected them for five regional bids,
right?
With Missouri being the fifth team in. And
a lot of those teams like Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Missouri, K-State, K-State was more on the outside of that, but teams that looked like they needed a break. Yeah, they were going to have to get a break or two.
Yep.
And they were all kind of bubble teams. That's
right.
How it felt like. A lot of teams
absolutely
in that 60 to 64 range. You know,
like, I agree. I mean, to me, coming into the year, I thought it was A&M, Texas, Oklahoma, and Baylor, to me, seemed like the four teams that I would have felt really good about as regional teams. And after that, I thought you had a group of everybody else that was, you know, like you said, perfectly put, a bubble team. I mean, Texas Tech felt like a preseason bubble team, and Missouri and Oklahoma State maybe, you know, Kansas State. I mean, even Kansas. I mean, all those teams, you could envision any one of those teams or two of those teams getting into regionals or none of them.
Right.
Right now it seems like, you know, if I had to bet, I'd bet on none of them.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, really, like right now, Baylor – probably having the best season of any of these teams in terms of like what their expectations were. They're kind of performing up to expectations. And even they have a couple of, I wouldn't say inexplicable losses, but you know, the couple losses to Lamar, getting shut out by Michigan State. This still seems like a somewhat erratic team, but I don't know if this, how this happens, but they have a very strange schedule where their first three league series are all at home.
Hmm.
So Texas Tech, Kansas, Oklahoma State, all at home before they you know, have a real shot. They have a chance to really make some hay.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season, basically, they don't have one three-game series at home after that because they have the two split series with A&M and Texas.
Right.
So they kind of need to make some hay right now while they're at home.
And those three series that they start off with are all eminently winnable, you know, with Kansas and Oklahoma State as the next two teams, and Oklahoma State's scuffling right now. And other than Andrew Haney, who he wrote about in Golden Spike Spotlight, they lost a series to Houston this weekend, and
they lost a couple weeks ago to TCU.
That's right, and then they were swept, of course, at Cal Poly to open the year. So Oklahoma State's nothing special, you know, they've got some youth and some injuries. They had a bunch of guys. I think they had three guys have Tommy John surgery before the season started. And, you know, I just think it's taken a toll on them. I think Baylor, to me, I think they're going to get off to a good start here in conference play and ride that kind of into the second half of the season and into regionals.
I got to think those injuries are going to make it tough for Frank Anderson. I mean, the guy has been, he's in his ninth season. They haven't been to regionals each of the last 3 years. Am I right about that, Aaron?
I'd have to go back and look, but I know
34 and 24, 29, 26, 35, 25. If they went, they went skin of their teeth, you know, one of those years. So just has not been a great stretch recently here for Oklahoma State. And, you know, you kind of hope for Frank's sake that they turn some things around.
I think it was Andy Oliver's sophomore year would have been their last regional year.
And that was, you know, just no team should have that happen to them, what the NCAA did to Oklahoma State. That's all there is to it. Aaron, I'm going to wrap up on this note. I'm springing this on you, unless there's something else you want to bring up. I got into this debate a little bit on Twitter with somebody the other day about college athletics, and I get a little tired of college athletics getting banged on as much as it does, because my basic thesis is the twofold. One, the NCAA is kind of indefensible, but college athletics is very defensible. College athletics does have I think the positives of college athletics, far the way they're set up in the United States, outweigh the negatives of college athletics. The NCAA is the real issue there, with just the arbitrariness, the rule book that's just too thick, the problems that I think even people with the NCAA in a frank moment would acknowledge. My other question and my other point I want to see if you agree with is that I'm not totally ignorant, but I am fairly ignorant of how amateur sports run in other countries. But I would say that the United States system is still more egalitarian and probably less corrupt than amateur sports around the rest of the world. Less corrupt in that I'm just looking at from the baseball standpoint. Amateur players around the rest of the world who can sign when they're 16, that's as corrupt as it gets in baseball. And then in the rest of the world, again, the egalitarian part of it, there a guy who's a good college player in Japan, does that guy – I think there is college baseball in Japan, but it feels like there's more opportunity and a better system here for the quote-unquote good college player who could really have a great college experience, play baseball, go to college, earn his way to a degree, take advantage of a lot of opportunities, even when it's not a full scholarship sport. I've been having that discussion with some people over the weekend on Twitter and about college athletics, and I don't know why I feel inclined. I never feel inclined to defend the NCAA, but I guess I have felt inclined lately to defend college athletics. I guess I just wanted to throw that out to you and see what you thought.
I love that distinction. I really do. I think it's an important distinction that the NCAA is not the same as college athletics as a concept. And I completely agree that, you know, I think there's a lot of problems with the NCAA, and we've talked over the years. We've railed on the NCAA about things we don't like.
Been some good Memorial Day rants.
That's right, and you know, not just on Selection Day. I mean, the way they treat players as far as the agent stuff is just inexcusable.
Yeah, the Andy Oliver thing is the thing that made me think of it. I mean, they just by trying to enforce their rules, they made Andy Oliver a guy who the one thing you want to be when you're in a team sport is a good teammate. And they made Andy Oliver a bad teammate because he couldn't be there for his teammates in that regional. And think of how it affects and impacts Frank Anderson's career. I mean, what if he had a trip to Omaha on that resume as a head coach with Andy Oliver? I mean, it's just that one arbitrary decision just seems to have had such ripple effects. Yeah. And the NCAA doesn't think about things like that, I don't think.
You know, I mean, we could go on and on about all the things that are wrong with the NCAA and wrong with the way that they govern college athletics, but I also think that it is important to note that, you know, when you're looking at things that are wrong with college athletics, yes, the NCAA is a big part of that, but the schools are a big part of that. And when it comes to the basketball and football levels, we have to acknowledge how greedy these university presidents and board of trustees are. I mean, it's the almighty dollar that drives everything. And it's not like that in baseball so much because it's just a different animal.
Right.
It's just such a smaller scale. And even the big schools that are really successful in baseball, you don't get the sense that there's maybe the corruption that I frankly think exists in other sports as far as the academic fraud that I suspect goes on and that has been proven to have gone on in a lot of places, including North Carolina and Florida State.
Our alma mater, absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely. Ohio State, Southern California.
I mean, it's, you know, in football and basketball, there's just, I think, These teams have proven, these schools have proven that they'll bend a lot of rules and just shatter a lot of rules, whatever it takes to get a competitive edge and, you know, get into the next big conference and get into the next big bowl game and make the next however millions of dollars in endorsements or whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a distinction between college football, college basketball, and the rest of college athletics. And I think the rest of college athletics, you know, is there's a lot of noble things about it. And there are noble
things. I think that word is justified. And especially, I know Ron Polk will unsubscribe after I say this. He'll unsubscribe to the podcast. But especially for women's athletes and women's sports, yeah. I mean, without the NCAA, really, without Title IX, without college athletics, that's a game changer for women in this country for the last 40 years. And I think it's been a game changer in the positive. And, yeah, Title IX and the way that schools have lived up to Title IX or not lived up to it has hurt baseball as a sport because it does reduce scholarships and yada, yada, yada. But just on the whole, when you're judging college athletics, women's sports is a giant plus for college athletics in this country. So,
And one last thought I think that also we should throw in here is, you know, hey, we're making these sweeping comments about football and basketball, but it's important to acknowledge, too, that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of legitimate, you know, hardworking student athletes in those sports, too, that, you know, that aren't going to be pro athletes and that aren't taking money or you know, getting the wrong kind of help with their school. I mean, just think of all the Division II and Division III, you know, players out there. I mean, the NCAA, there are a lot of college athletes. It's, you know, just because we've seen, you know, a half dozen cases of pretty ugly corruption in the last few years, you know, in some of these football programs, it's not fair to necessarily impugn college football as a whole.
To me, it really is it impugns capitalism more than it impugns college athletics, because the factor here, the thing that changes everything, is the greed, the intersection of the big money sports with amateurism, the idea of amateurism, which is an outdated idea. Yep. That's where you get the real problems. But that could be a whole separate podcast, and we probably should get a guest for that podcast. That would be a fun podcast, though.
We should get my wife as a guest. She wrote a legal note about how the NCAA's concept of amateurism is outdated and really needs to be redefined and could solve a lot of their problems. I think that's true. I think that the NCAA clings to this outdated notion that that you know athletes need to be amateurs and can't be paid. Well, you know, maybe it'd be better off in some cases acknowledging that a profit motive does exist.
Yeah, I mean, this is America, you know.
That's right.
A profit motive exists for this podcast, which is sponsored by ATEC.
What a great segue.
The Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. ATEC is committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Aaron, I cannot wipe the smile off my face that I made that that segue.
You're your world-class podcast host, John. I got to give it to you.
Thanks. That was fun. Big week coming up in college baseball. Obviously, we got Florida at South Cackalack. That's going to be big time. Care to handicap that series real quick?
I like the Gators. I just think they're playing better, and I think they are better. And even though it's in Columbia, I'm going to take Florida to win 2 out of 3.
Here's a couple other things that jump out to me in next weekend's schedules. And I have to give a shout-out to D1Baseball.com, which you know makes a lot of this so much easier to find. You could go between all the conference websites, but I enjoy the website, and they do a great job of aggregating schedules and things like that, which is very helpful.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of college baseball fans already use it. But you got some pretty, I think, kind of a make-or-break series for Vanderbilt, home against Georgia next weekend. We didn't really talk about Mississippi State, but their injury-riddled bunch, feisty bunch, at home against Arkansas next weekend, that's going to be a pretty nice test. LSU going on the road. And every time I think of LSU, Aaron, I'm thinking of Appalachian State this year. And Appalachian State just keeps on kind of chugging along. Of course, they won that series at LSU in the second weekend of the season. They've got two non-conference wins against Duke. I don't know how much it's going to help their RPI. You're playing an ACC team.
Right.
That'll help. But they swept their first two conference series in Southern Conference play, Davidson and Citadel. Kind of get a bigger test next weekend at Elon. Elon, a consistent winner in the Southern Conference, where the league is, I think, a little bit down just because of the injuries that have plagued Georgia Southern, the preseason favorite,
right,
Victor Roach's injury, and then Chris Beck really not being that sharp. What else are you looking forward to next weekend?
Well, I'm excited about the one series we touched on earlier, which is East Carolina and Central Florida. I think it's you know, to me that's an opportunity to really see who's legit in the Conference USA. I mean, I think both those teams are exciting, but this is the first test certainly on the weekend for the Knights, and I'm eager to see how they fare.
That's a good one. Conference play pretty much starts everywhere. If it hasn't already started, the Big East starts next weekend. Purdue at Ohio State, that'll be interesting in the Big Ten, where Purdue obviously still in our top 25 rankings there at 25. Illinois at Nebraska. So Nebraska's kind of Big Ten era really gets started, I guess, next weekend. And, you know, there's a lot to I know it can be hard, especially for me. It can be hard sometimes to turn off the basketball on a weekend. But if you pay attention, and obviously if you listen to this podcast, you'd pay attention. There's a lot of great college baseball out there, and the weather has been so warm around most of the country. Although I guess a little stormy in SoCal this weekend, huh?
Yeah, we got the bad end of it. It was a rainy Saturday, but fortunately Sunday cooperated, and we were able to get that double header in at UCLA, and it worked out very well.
Well, get out for people to – we definitely encourage people to get out there and take in some of this. I forgot to read this Twitter question, and we'll wrap up, Aaron. S_O_Smith asks, we dropped Oregon at 24. Where's Washington right now? Washington made a mistake, which allowed UO to win the last game. They felt that Washington dominated the series. Kind of been an interesting year for Lindsey Meggs and the Huskies. I wouldn't say they're necessarily near the top 25, but they've shown some signs of progress this year, which is the best thing I would say.
I agree. I mean, I love the fact that they went down to UC Irvine and won a series back in week two. You know, they started the season in Southern California and won a series at San Diego State, you know. And then, you know, they went down to Cal Poly and played okay, won a game down there against a team that's played pretty well, Cal Poly. And then this weekend, certainly.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we really haven't talked about Cal Poly, but that's one we should try to talk about more next week.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit Big West focus on next week's podcast, because Cal Poly's off to a really encouraging start. But I'll let you finish your answer about UW.
Yeah, you know, and then certainly this weekend, taking 2 out of 3 against Oregon is a nice way for Washington to start the season. I think you know, I think their team is intriguing. I mean, talent-wise, I like some of their young talent, some of their freshmen. You know, they've definitely upgraded the talent level there, and they've got a couple of good juniors. I mean, Jacob Lamb is a guy that we know Connor Glassy's really excited about, is you know, one of his Northwest guys. But
right.
You know, I think for one thing, you know, you as far as being a top 25 consideration, I mean, they came from way back, you know, and
right,
they still got some work to do to get up there. And I still think, looking at the Pac-12, the problem is Washington, I think, is decent, but who are they really better than? I mean, you know, it's this league is so deep, and right now, I mean, they're I just think they're well back in the pecking order, and you know, it's I think as the season progresses, I think they're going to probably settle back toward the back part of the standings. I mean, even Oregon, you know, is a team that probably is artificially inflated when it comes to the ranking. We maybe overreacted when they swept that series at Vanderbilt, because it turns out Vanderbilt isn't as good as we thought they were.
Right.
You know, so we'll see how good Oregon is as well. Like, both those teams, it remains to be seen, you know, how they're going to fare in conference. I just think that at the top of the league, with Stanford, UCLA, Arizona State, Oregon State, you know, those, what, five teams? And then, you know, and then you still have to consider Cal a real factor, even though they got swept this weekend, with all the talent they have back from last year's Omaha team. You know, USC has shown signs of being pretty good this year, although they lost the series to Utah. So maybe you got to think about Utah as a factor. You know, Washington State's dangerous. The league is really deep, but I think those top five teams are just a real clear cut above everybody else.
And that's a great point and a great way to end it. Thanks to everybody for the Twitter questions. Again, if you're not already following him, at Aaron Fitt is Aaron Fitt's Twitter. I am at John Manuel BA. And this has been the Baseball America Podcast. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week. So long, everybody.